They parted in an effort to speak several times before they shaped any words. Painfully, in a low voice, his speech began. Later he got more freedom, and his voice a fuller ring. Only at the very last, when he blessed Benjamin, did it die away in weakness. "Welcome, Israel," he said. "Girdle of the earth, zone of your courses, stronghold and dike of the skies, ordered in sacred pictures. Lo, obediently you came in your host, and stoutly gathered yourselves full numbered round the bed of my death, that I may judge you according to the truth, and foretell to you out of the wisdom of my last hour. Praise be yours, my ring of sons, for your readiness, and commendation for your courage. Blessed be ye altogether by the hand of the dying, and glorified altogether. Be blessed by my well-saved strength, and blessed to eternity. Mark now what I have to say to you. Each by himself in your order is said within the bond of the general blessing." Here he paused in his speech, and only moved his lips a while to himself, without any sound. Then his features became concentrated, the skin of his forehead wrinkled with strain, as he drew his brows together to fight his weakness. "Reuben!" came the summons from his lips. The shepherd tower strode out on his girded legs like strong columns. He was quite gray-headed, and his red, smooth-shaven face worked like that of a chidden child about to cry. The eyes, with their inflamed lids, kept up a blinking beneath the white brows. The corners of his mouth were drawn down in such bitterness, so violently, that they made thick ridges of muscle at the sides. He knelt at the bed's edge and bowed himself over it. "Reuben, my eldest son," Jacob began, "you are the beginning of my strength, the firstling of my manhood. Yours was the right of the firstborn, and a mighty preeminence. In the circle you were the highest, the nearest to the sacrificing, and the nearest to the kinship. But it was all wrong. A heathen god showed it to me on the field in a dream, a biting beast, a dog-boy of the desert with beautiful legs sitting on a stone, begot by a mistake, begot with the wrong one in the blind night to which everything is the same and knows naught of distinctions in love. So I begot you, my eldest, in the windy night, with the wrong one, the strong one, begot you in my delusion. I gave her the flower, but there had been an exchange. The veil was exchanged, and daylight taught me that I had only begot where I falsely thought to love, and my heart and my bowels turned over, and I despaired of my soul." Now there was a time when they did not understand what he said. He moved his lips and soundlessly talked to himself. Then his voice came back, stronger than before, and part of the time he spoke of Reuben in the third person, no longer to him. "He shot away like water," said he, "like water bubbling over out of a pot. Not he shall be the head, not he the king post of the house. He shall have no preeminence. For he went up to his father's bed, and has defiled his father's bed with his going up. He has bared and mocked his father's shame, and come near him with the sickle, and committed naughtiness with his mother. Ham is he, black of face, and goes bare with naked shame, for as the dragon of the slime has he borne him, and after the ways of the hippopotamus. Hear you, my early strength, what I say of you. May you be accursed, my son. That is, accursed within the scope of the blessing. For the firstborn right is taken away from you, the priesthood revoked, and the kingly headship recalled. For you are not worthy of the leadership, and your firstborn right is done away. Beyond the salt sea shall you live, and border on Moab. Your deeds are weakly, and your fruits are poor. Thank you, my eldest son, that you so stout-heartedly came to the gathering and boldly put yourself in the way of judgment. You are like a shepherd tower, and move on your legs like moving columns of a temple, because I scattered my first strength and manhood so mightily in the madness of the night. Receive a father's curse, and so farewell. He ceased, and the aging Reuben stepped back among the ranks, all the muscles of his face grim with dignity, and his eyes cast down, just as his mother used to cast hers down to hide her squinting. The brothers, Jacob next commanded, the twin sons, inseparable in the skies. And Simeon and Levi bent and bowed down before him. They were 75 and 76 years old, for of course they were not twins, only inseparables, but they had astonishingly preserved their rough and blustering outward appearance. Oh, how scored and scarred with ingrained savagery! Exclaimed their father. He even started back as though in fear. They kiss the instruments of cruelty. I will know naught of them, for I love it not, ye savage ones. May my soul come not in their counsels, nor my honor have any part with theirs. Their anger slew a man, and their self-will mutilated the cattle. Therefore the curse of the injured struck them down, and they were appointed for destruction. What have I said to them? Cursed be their anger that it was so fierce, and their wrath for that it was stubborn. That have I said to you. Be accursed, my dear ones, accursed within the blessing. Ye shall be divided and scattered that ye commit not misdoing together forever. Be dispersed in Jacob, my Levi. Yours be a lot and land none the less, stout Simeon, but I see it stands not alone, but is consumed in Israel. Take your place in the background, double star, having heard the deathbed second sight of the Blessing One. Step back. They did so, not vastly upset by the judgment. They had long known it, and expected nothing better. Having it once more expressly served up in open meeting did not cut them up, for everybody knew it before, and they still remained Israel. Their rejection was only within the scope of the general blessing. Besides, they and the whole audience espoused the view that rejection is a destiny like any other, with a dignity of its own. Every condition is a condition of honor. Such was their view, and the view of all the others. After all, it was pretty plain that part of what their father had said did not refer to them, but to the constellation of the twin brethren. Partly out of his native weakness for the elusive, partly in the mental confusion of his state, to which, on the same ground, he solemnly gave way, he had mixed them up with Gemini, and brought in Babylonian allusions well known to them all, even to the lads sitting on the chests along the walls. Deliberately and blatantly, he had at times confused them with Gilgamesh and Eabani in the song, so enraged about their sister that they had cut in pieces the heavenly steer, and for this blasphemy been cursed by Ishtar. But they had not paid particular attention to any steer at Shechem, the city of Sychem, the scene of the butchery, nor did they recall having mutilated any. Jacob, however, had had this fixed idea about a steer from the beginning, and always brought it up when they came back to the subject. But can anyone be more honorably cursed than to be confused with the Dioscuri and the sun and moon? That is a rejection one can take even in public. It is only half personal. The other half is spun out of the dream fancies of a dying man. It is necessary to emphasize here that many astral allusions were thus mixed into these pronouncements of Jacob to his sons. They gave elevation to his discourse, and also imparted a certain touch of human fallibility. That was both weakness and willfulness, with a good deal of willfulness in the weakness. There was a hint of Aquarius in what he had said to Reuben. Now it was Judah's turn, and Jacob so nearly expended himself in the decisive and tremendous blessing he now bestowed, that after it he had repeatedly to call on God for help, fearing he might not last out, and particularly that he might not get round to Joseph. Judah had always been called the Lion, but Jacob's dying words to him played so untiringly on the epithet and showed him so explicitly lion-like that Judah writhed in torment, and nobody present could possibly fail to recognize the heavenly phenomenon. A great deal of Cancer came out in Issachar. The constellation of the little asses, which stands in this sign of the zodiac, was brought into cosmic connection with his everyday nickname of the bony ass. In Dan, everybody made out the scales, the metaphor of law and justice, though the adder in the path came out as well. And Naphtali's stag and hind passed over, intelligibly to most of the audience, into the ram. Joseph himself was no exception. On the contrary, in his judgment, the astral implication was double. The virgin and the bull alternated therein. Benjamin's judgment seemed to be conditioned by Scorpio, for the good little man was pronounced a ravening wolf, only because Lupus stands nearby, south of the sign, with a sting in its tail. Here the mythological coloration and the divorce from the personal became clearest of all. It was that which made it so much easier for the big twins to take their condemnation with equanimity. They lived in an earlier time, but also in a time that was already a later one. In some directions they possessed a good deal of insight, for instance, into the not absolutely reliable character of deathbed prophecies. The gaze which the departing one sends into the future is impressive and hallowed. Much faith may be put in it, yet not too much, for it has not always been entirely justified, and it seems that the already unearthly state of the dying which produces it can also be a source of error. Jacob solemnly made some solemn misfires, along with some prophecies that amazingly hit the mark. Reuben's ascendance never did amount to much, and Simeon's stock was never independent, and was absorbed into Judah's. But that the blood of Levi would in time attain to the highest honor and achieve permanent election to the priesthood, as we who are in the story but also outside it already know, that was obviously hidden from Jacob's parting gaze. In this respect, and in some others, his dying prophecies were a dignified failure. Of Zebulun, he said that he would dwell at the haven of the sea, and before an haven of ships. His border should be unto Sidon. That was a natural guess, on account of Zebulun's well-known fondness for the sea and the smell of pitch. But the location of his tribe was not to be by green water at all, nor did it ever border on Sidon. It lay between Sidon and the Sea of Galilee, separated from the latter by Naphtali's portion, and from the sea by Asher's. For us, such errors are valuable. For are there not clever people who assert that Jacob's blessing speech was composed after the time of Joshua, and should be regarded as prophecy after the event? We may shrug our shoulders at this, not only because we are present at the deathbed and hear the dying man's words with our own ears, but also because prophecies which are given out with history to go upon, backdated prophecies, so to speak, have no trouble in being correct. The best evidence for the genuineness of a prophecy is its incorrectness.